Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, it's been a few weeks since we've sat down and done one of these. And it's all right because, you know, it's July. But it's almost not all right because we got like 3 days before the Lions report to training camp.
Technically, that's 3 days before the fans can attend training camp. But training camp actually starts Wednesday. So the media is going to be in camp on Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. And then the fans get to come on Saturday. The season ticket holders only. The league has a mandatory Sunday off. And then Monday starts up the general public admission. And when that happens, it should coincide real well with when they put the pads on, right? So they're going to go, I think, probably light, like no pads first couple of days, then maybe some shells, and then it's going to eventually be like full-on pads come either Saturday or Monday, right when the fans show up. I think that was done purposefully.
All right. Now, you also mentioned in your notes here with the writers reporting Wednesday, you know, that's like a specific note to yourself. Really nobody listening that's going to have any impact for.
Well, you know what, the way it impacts everyone else is that we're all going to be writing about it, right? So we're all going to be putting out observations starting Wednesday. We're going to have different storylines. We're going to have access to the Dan Campbell again, which we haven't had in, you know, 6 weeks or whatever it's been. We'll get player access. So all of that stuff opens up right off the bat, even though fans aren't technically in camp for a few more days. So that's the exciting part, is that even though the fans don't have full access just yet, the reporters will. And so we're going to get a whole bunch of information coming at us real quick here.
Did Dan Campbell go on vacation? Do we know this? Did he go somewhere?
What he said was he was going to help facilitate his family moving to the area. Right.
Okay, that's right. He didn't go climb Kilimanjaro.
No. So he had a couple loose ends to tie up before he took off after everyone else did, and then family moving in, then back to work. They've been back to work a few weeks now because the rookies came in last week, the veterans came in today, and then they start putting people in motion on the field tomorrow.
Goff came in with the rookies, right?
He did. Wouldn't be surprised if the other quarterbacks also came in with the rookies, not just Goff, but the other two. You know, they don't have rookie arms. And so they probably, you know, use those guys to help, you know, loosen the rookies up a little bit.
All right. So you outlined what training camp's going to be like. The team will start on Wednesday. Fans will get to show up on Saturday, just the season ticket holders, general public on Monday, no pads during the week. Maybe some shells on the midweek and pads likely on Monday when the general public is to show up. So that's as far as the training camp schedule, that's where we're at. Let's go to roster moves real quick. Nose tackle Brian Price retired. Now, not an old man, Brian Price, still rather young.
Yeah, no, he's 27, I think he was. But it's his fifth team in 5 years in the league. He's been with the Packers twice. You know, he went into this camp as the third nose tackle. And as we've talked about before, nose tackle is not a full-time position. So to be third on the list and really behind two really good youngsters, there was not really a path for him to the roster. And so maybe he thought he couldn't get on anywhere else. Maybe there's concerns over COVID, right? I mean, like there's a whole litany of reasons why he decided to hang it up. But, you know, this is a second player this offseason that has decided to retire. Strange.
Yeah, with Josh Hill, they'd rather retire than play for the Lions.
See, I knew there's going to be people that take that narrative.
No,
for sure.
Of course people are going to say that.
you never know why people decide to hang him up. But maybe, you know, maybe he didn't want it. Maybe he just didn't think he had what it took. He actually didn't look bad in camp, which is a little surprising that he's not going to be there.
All right, so Price, yeah, he was 27 years old, 6'3", 322, so we'll miss that size. Sure. Played for the Packers, Cowboys, Browns, Raiders in uniform in regular season games. He's also listed with the Jacksonville Jaguars probably during an offseason. Played 24 games, started one of them. So, you know, he did get to live the dream somewhat. He got to get out there a little bit. So, without Brian Price now, maybe not a direct correlated move, but they claim defensive tackle Bruce Hector, leave off of waivers from the Eagles. Is that correct?
Actually, off Tennessee. He got his start with the Eagles. Yeah. He was undrafted, signed with the Eagles. He found some playing time over the first couple of years in the league with the Eagles, but has not really done a whole lot since. He is 6'2", under 300.
So, yeah, smaller than Price, not a nose tackle.
Correct. So he's a guy that you're going to put at that kind of three tackle, defensive tackle that you're going to see Deshaun Hand and Onwuzurike competing at. You put Kevin Strong in that mix there as well. And Jayshon Cornell. But, you know, Cornell is suspended. So it's possible that this was, you know, or, you know, this is, it's possible they're just looking to get another guy in there, you know, for depth purposes. Maybe because of the suspension or maybe they just want to push the guys a little bit more, but they claimed him. They didn't like sign him as a free agent. So the fact that they put in a claim means that, you know, they're pretty interested in him. So we'll see what happens with that. He's more of a pass rusher than a run stuffer. He is more of a one gapper. So it'll be interesting to see how he fits in.
All right, so let's talk about how he fits in, but we'll get to the defense. We're going to talk about the roster battles, the position battles that we're going to see coming up during training camp. And as always, we start with the offense, so we'll get to Bruce Hector in a few minutes. And we'll start at the most important position on the field, that's at quarterback. Not much of a competition for Jared Goff. I would assume he's going to be entrenched as the starter, but a little bit of a competition between Tim Boyle and David Blau as the backup QB.
Yeah, you know, I think that's a battle for sure. And what's not clear is, are they going to keep two or are they going to keep three quarterbacks? And, you know, if you look back at what the Chargers have done, if you look back at what the Rams have done, Chargers because of Anthony Lynn, of course, the offensive coordinator. But if you look back at like what they've done, and you can include the Saints in that as well, those teams have not been afraid to go with just two signal callers. Now, the Saints usually keep three because of Taysom Hill, but maybe the Saints you only give a 2.5 nod to. But keeping two is not out of the realm of possibility. And if that's the case, then they're paying Tim Boyle to be that guy. Will he beat out Blau? Well, he did look stronger than Blau in the spring, which is a bit concerning. But
Packers writers think that Boyle's going to start a QB.
They did. So I'm still waiting to see that guy. Now, I've watched his preseason game film, and I've seen, you know, what they saw, and he looked good. And maybe he's a gamer, you know, maybe he's the Allen Iverson version of Lions quarterbacks, and he doesn't like practice, but
yeah,
he hasn't impressed me yet, but I'm still kind of giving him the nod. I still think keeping two quarterbacks is very much a possibility. What's mildly concerning to me is that David Blau is a guy that teams have tried to acquire previously. The Cowboys last year tried to poach him off the practice squad, which forced the Lions to sign him to the active roster in order to keep him. And so if you risk putting David Blau to waivers and trying to sneak him on the practice squad, it's possible you lose him. And if you lose him and you only have two quarterbacks that know your system, you're one injury away from having a big problem. So I do think there's a possibility that they keep all three quarterbacks just because of that, you know, injury concern. But at the same time, they may need those extra roster space for another player at another position.
All right, moving on to the next position, the running back position. So DeAndre Swift, Jamal Williams, Jamar Jefferson, Dedrick Mills, and Michael Warren. Those are the traditional halfback, tailback style runners with Jason Kabinda as the fullback. I don't know if we have to really talk about Kabinda. His spot seems pretty safe with him and his value on his special teams.
Yeah, you know, both the Chargers and the Saints kept a traditional fullback. And they kept three running backs and a traditional fullback, both the Chargers and the Saints. The Rams kept four traditional running backs, no fullback. So I tend to side with the coaches when it comes down to like decision-making, like, hey, we need this guy for the X, Y, and Z reasons. And so my guess is that Brad Holmes will not fight them over that. And he'll say, okay, you've got Swift, Williams, and the Jefferson, the guy that I invested in, instead of, if you want to keep Kabinda as your fourth guy at the position, great. We'll try and sneak Mills over onto the practice squad. Right. So it seems pretty straightforward to me. What gets tricky is, will they add a guy, right? Like we talked about at the top, they're still at 89 players, right? So they've been going after Todd Gurley. If they sign Todd Gurley, how does that shake up their roster evaluation? Whose spot does Gurley take? Does he take a fullback? Does he take Jefferson? Does he take another position? That's really an unknown at this point.
Yeah, I don't think are they going to get Todd Gurley? Hasn't that ship sailed? I guess he's still available, right?
Yeah, he's not anything done anything. Happen, but,
All right, moving on to wide receiver. Rashard Perriman, Amon-Ra St. Brown, Tyrell Williams. That's been kind of the talk of that's the three starters we're going to see at receiver. But we've got a big group of guys behind him. Damian Ratley, Chad Hansen, Javon McKinley. And Quintez Cephas, Jaron Wallace, and Sage Surratt as the outside receivers with Khalif Raymond, Victor Bolden, and Tom Kennedy in the mixed slot receiver.
Yeah, you've got those the last three slot or outside receivers you mentioned, Cephas, Allison, Surratt. They can also play in the slot kind of as like a big option, right? So you've got three pure outside guys, three pure slot guys, and then three guys that are outside or big slot options. So they've got some variety, right? The trick is just going to be, what style of receiver do you think that you're missing, right? You've got your two outside guys who are your traditional field stretchers that are, you know, have the size matchups. Then you've got St. Brown, who is your, you know, traditional slot receiver, but he's a different kind of slot receiver than what we've seen most recently with like Amendola. Amendola is more of this, you know, quick as a hiccup type guy, and you don't get that in Amon-Ra. So if you want a guy like that, if you want a shifty guy, well, then you're probably looking at the Khalif Raymond, Victor Bolden battle. And Bolden has looked sharp in the spring, especially in offense, whereas Raymond has been a guy who has more of a history as a punt returner. Now Bolden's also in the mix as punt kick returner as well. But it's very possible that they try and get two birds with one stone here and let Raymond and Bolden play as that backup slot, play as that returner. Whichever one wins the battle is going to get both positions, and the other guy ends up going to the practice squad. Right. So, I think Raymond has a bit of a heads up right now, but we'll see how it goes. It's definitely not over. Then if you want one of those outside guys, you know, who do you like more? Do you like, Ratley? Do you like Hansen? Do you like McKinley? McKinley is on the NFI right now, so he's not even going to get a chance to contribute right off the bat, which is automatically going to hurt him. And on my depth chart, he was at the bottom anyways. So he's not doing himself any favors. So will a guy like Hansen do enough to beat out a Ratley, or will they be looking for more hybrid guys like Cephas, Allison, and Surratt? I don't think they're ruling anything out, right? I think Cephas has got a really good shot. He looked really good in the spring, but then that sixth receiver, who's that going to be? Is it going to be Ratley, the guy that you signed as a free agent? Is it going to be Allison, who's the veteran carryover? Is it going to be Surratt, who's the the Upside UDFA, who they thought, you know, very highly of during the draft process. So that's really up in the air. Now, I do think they're going to keep six, because if you look again back at those three rosters, Rams, Saints, Chargers, they all kept six receivers. So it wouldn't, you know, it would make sense that, you know, they're going to follow suit here and probably keep six as well.
All right. We got a bevy of tight ends on the roster currently too. TJ sure. Hockenson obviously is going to be the number one. Darren Fells seems pretty entrenched at number two. Then we've got Elise Mack, Jake Hausman, Hunter Thedford, Brock Wright, and Charlie Taumaupo.
Do you, I mean, like, I know you're a big Notre Dame skill guy, so I know you're a Mac fan.
No, I guess. I don't know. I'm not a fan of any of those bottom five guys, I guess.
I mean, technically, Brock Wright is also a Notre Dame guy as well, right? So, so you got a couple of Notre Dame tight ends on there. But yeah, Mac was the guy that they were using as the third option in the spring. He looked good. I don't know if you happened to catch the picture that the Lions put up of him showing up at camp.
Yeah, I saw the picture.
My goodness.
It doesn't mean you're going to be a great football player.
It does not mean you're going to be a great football player, but my goodness, is he ripped. It was very impressive. So then it becomes, if you're keeping that third traditional tight end in Mac, which it seems like that's the direction they could go right now, then do you want to replace the Josh Hill guy? Do you want that H-back, right? So Hausman is the guy that I think has the best chance to be that H-back. But, you know, Wright is an exceptional athlete. Maybe he'll find himself in the mix. Thedford is a guy who's a former defensive end. So maybe he, you know, ends up becoming like their version of Matt Nelson, but at tight end. It's really hard to say. So, If they were going to keep a fourth, Hausman's the guy I would tell people to keep an eye on. You know, he's even got I think his number's in the 40s. Like he's either 40 or 42. Like that's a guy who's going to be a hybrid, you know, tight end H-back type of guy. Right. Like, so,
sure.
Should be easy to, should
but
be
now the numbers, it doesn't matter. It could be at anything.
That's very true. But yeah, I think
now we can't follow that as much anymore.
Well, with the UDFA guys, I think we can probably follow it a little bit. But yeah, no, I agree. The number shift is going to make things a lot more challenging.
So this is a position where they're probably going to have two or three guys on the practice squad then, huh?
I think they're going to have three on the roster and then probably, two on the practice squad, one traditional, one H-back. I was at one point I was inclined to think they would keep four, but when I got through the rest of the roster and I started seeing like how, you know, the spots that they need help and whatnot, I got a feeling that they're probably only going to keep three. I don't know if they can afford to keep a fourth one.
All right, moving down to the offensive line, we'll start on the outside left tackle. Taylor Decker, Tyrell Crosby, Dan Skipper, right tackle, Penei Sewell, Matt Nelson, and Darren Paulo.
Yeah, you know, Decker and Sewell are kind of locked in. I know we had speculated that Sewell and Crosby might battle it out, and it's still possible that they will.
They better not. This better not be a – like, if Crosby can beat out Sewell, I don't know.
It would be a problem. It would be a problem. But it sure seems like Sewell is going to be the guy. I can't imagine that he's not going to be. But then, you know, Crosby, he's going to play both left and right. He's probably going to be the third tackle.
He's the third tackle.
Yeah, at both spots. So
I would even argue he's the sixth offensive lineman.
No, I agree. I completely agree.
That they put him in no matter who gets hurt. They just move everybody around.
Yeah, and I would completely agree with that, just because you have some flexibility amongst those centers the starters to make that happen, and I do believe Crosby is just that much more talented than everybody else on the reserve. I know there's a bunch of Matt Nelson fans out there, but he's OT4, you know, and he's ahead of Dan Skipper, and you should be happy about that, right? But Matt Nelson is not going to be like he's not going to be in the mix as like a starter. I know people are high on him and saying, oh, he could be the top backup off the bench, but he got in the reasoning, I guess, is that they cite the Chicago game when he stepped in and then Mac didn't get a sack against him like the whole game. Well, we've talked about this. He had a lot of help and he's still learning. He's only a couple years removed from playing defense. I don't think he's quite ready, and he's not better than Crosby, who is a well-established offensive lineman who could probably start on some teams. And so, for me though, those four are the top ones. I don't think Skipper's going to beat out Nelson. And I also don't think that Paolo is going to do anything. I mean, he was just, he's a body to
camp body.
Yeah. He's so that they can have three lines. Right. So.
All right. Left guard, right guard. Left guard, Jonah Jackson. Reserves, Logan Stenberg and Evan Heim. Right guard, Hal Vitae.
Yeah.
With Tommy Kramer backing him up.
Yeah, so Vitae and Jackson are definitely solidified in there as the starters. Stenberg has the most upside, I guess. I mean, like, he was a fourth round pick for a reason.
The enigma on the Lions offensive line.
Yeah, because we just don't know, right? We haven't seen him physically hit anyone in almost a year. And so we don't know how he's developed. But from what we've known of him in the past, the upside's there, right? So maybe he ends up being the top natural interior guy who you still might see Crosby on the field earlier than him. But, you know, he might be the top of the reserves. Now, there's a lot of Tommy Kramer fans, and maybe that's the Notre Dame thing as well, right?
Yep. It's not
he's going to get some love. He's played right guard and right tackle, which is a nice feather in his cap, more of a guard in the NFL, in my opinion. But he's got
he was the right tackle at Notre Dame. Where was he, left tackle last year?
He played
tackle.
Yeah, he did. He started playing his career at guard, though. And then he shifted to right tackle. And I think he had to play left tackle for a bit and then finished it at right tackle as well. I think he's a guard, though, in the NFL. I don't think there's a whole lot of question. But if you're guarding the NFL with tackle experience, you know, that's valuable. You know, it makes you like Matt Nelson, who's a tackle who can play guard. If you're a guard who can play tackle, that the coaches are going to like that. And you're going to stick around one way or another, even if it's on the practice squad. So, you know, do they decide to keep two interior guards when you're already keeping two offensive tackles and you're going to absolutely keep a center? I don't know if you have spots for 10 offensive linemen to have a backup at every spot. It's going to be really interesting to see how it plays out. If you look again back at the rosters from where the coaching staff and front office come from, they've kept 8 or 9. I think the Rams kept 9, the Saints kept 8, and the Chargers kept 10. Right, so there's no real clear blueprint like at wide receiver. But you know, with the NFL rules, remember the rules that got put in place last year with the extended roster on game day where you have to have 8 offensive linemen active? They're going to have at least 8, right? That's the minimum. But how much further beyond that 8 are they going to keep? Yeah, are they going to keep 9 and then just hope that, you know, at worst one guy gets injured? Or are they going to keep 10 because they want to back up at every spot? That's the unknown. My guess, I'm going to kind of split the difference. I'm putting 9 in my projected 53, and it's going to be Tommy Kramer who ends up getting left off.
All right, moving to center, Frank Ragnow. Obviously, he's going to be the starter. Evan Brown, Drake Jackson, the reserves. Drake Jackson, former teammate of Logan Stenberg at Kentucky.
Yeah, 4-year starter at center, highly productive, really good story, but he's short. And he is, he doesn't have a really good arm length, and he's kind of a center. He has like a center only body. And that center only is a bit of a problem when you're a reserve. You know, if you don't have that flexibility, it makes everything limited, right? So a guy like Evan Brown, who can play center and guard, he's going to, if he beats out or if he's doing better than Kramer and Jackson, then, you know, you're killing two birds with one stone here. So I'm thinking Evan Brown is probably going to have the nod over Jackson, even though Jackson has the higher ceiling. I think he's limited right now. But if he can prove he can play guard in camp, yeah, I'll bump Jackson up over Brown. But as of right now, I think the flexibility of Brown makes him more valuable, and he'll end up being in my 53 instead of Jackson. Even though I like Jackson more, I think the flexibility makes him valuable.
All right, flipping over to the defensive side of the ball, starting at nose tackle, Aleem McNeil and John Pennacini. Now, Brian Price is gone, so down to two nose tackles.
Yeah, and I think that's fine, and that's probably what they're going to roll with. We've talked about this again previously. The nose tackle position is not a full-time position. You need a starter, and that starter has to be able to make an impact when he's on the field, but they only use a nose tackle like 40% of the time. It's not a full-time type thing. So McNeil's going to be the starter then, but can you get away with only having McNeil? And because it's a part-time spot, and then not, you know, leaning on John Pennacini as the backup, do you need to keep a roster spot for a reserve at a part-time position? That's really the question. My answer though is that Pennacini has enough upside that you're going to keep him because he gives you value. He's shown he can flex out a little bit. There's developmental upside. And realistically, if McNeil gets injured, then you lose that nose tackle position altogether, which is a bit of a scary thought, especially when you are relying on it 40% of the time, right? So I think both make the roster, and I don't think anybody that they bring in is going to challenge those two. Those two are kind of locked in for me.
All right, the defensive tackle positions. Now, these, as you just pointed out, with nose tackle being a part-time position, we could see both of these guys on the field at the same time with the nose tackle, without the nose tackle, but they'll be on the interior defensive line. So Sean Han, Levi Onwuzurike, and Bruce Hector, and Michael Brockers, Nick Williams, and Kevin Strong.
And then Jayshon Cornell, who's suspended, right? He can practice during training camp, but he won't be on the active roster for at least 3 weeks. So he kind of gets shuffled to the side a little bit, but he gets a chance to prove himself, to see if he's worth it in camp. So they've got seven guys for these two spots. They're probably only going to keep four. So that means you're going to lose, you know, almost half of them, right? Onwuzurike, of course, is kind of locked in. So is Brockers. Beyond that, though, it's a lot of question marks. Nick Williams took a pay cut, but is he still valuable enough for that money that he's still earning? Can Deshaun Hand stay healthy? Can Kevin Strong continue his ascension? And he has such a elite first step. You know, is there a spot for that in the new scheme, which he seems a little bit better suited for? Can Cornell earn a spot where they need to bring him back after week three? A lot of unknown questions. My guess is that it's going to be Hand and Onwuzurike battling it out for a starter job. I think Hand will technically be the starter, even though he might not see as many snaps as Onwuzurike, mostly because coaches tend to favor the veterans. But Hand, Onwuzurike, and then I'm just going to give the nod to Williams as well, because again, he's a veteran, and he's I think should do well backing up Michael Brockers and contribute on the other side as well. So those four seem pretty good. Unfortunately for me, that puts my guy Kevin Strong on the outside, which, you know, is disappointing, but it's hard to argue when you only have so many limited spots.
So this is interesting. So here's like the first battle. You know, none of these other positions seem like they're actual battles, but here's one, because I've seen the stories. I don't think you're one of those in the camp that have Deshaun Hand being the odd man out and being, you know, one of the cuts,
which is possible.
Yeah. I mean, I probably sit more on your side that he'll make the roster, but easily couldn't. Same thing with Nick Williams. even though he gets paid so much, probably not likely. Even though he took the pay cut, probably still not likely they're going to get rid of him. But then Kevin Strutt, it's like those three guys, yeah. Two of them will make it. And what if Cornell is really good? This is the one interesting one, I think, on the whole roster.
It's I think what was surprising to me as I was kind of digging in on it and kind of and doing my write up, is that you've got Onsarike, who's the future starter, Brockers, who is a current starter, and then you drafted McNeil to be the starter. Yet Hand, Williams, and Pennacini, they all started last year. So technically, you've got a whole litany of guys who are either projected to start or did just start last season. So there's some experience here. And low-key, you know, they may not be as bad overall as what we've seen. And I mean, it should really speak to how bad the team was last year when you had half of these guys and you thought it was good enough. And now you have double that. And then you're like, okay, this makes more sense. That this is an actual NFL defensive line now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Continuing on with that idea, we'll go to the Will linebacker position that we got Trey Flowers, not really the incumbent starter, but he is the starter there. Julian Aguara and Robert McCray following him on the depth chart.
Yeah, and it's hard to exactly say, is Flowers going to stay at that edge spot the whole time on the weak side?
I don't buy it. I don't think he will.
Well, he's penciled there for me for a couple of reasons. One, he's always rushed from the weak side. That's always been something that he's done historically. Also, that's where they used him in the spring, right? But I do think he's going to shift around. And I also think that he's going to get time with his hand in the dirt as well. You know, while we're talking about this three-man front with these two edge guys, you know, we're going to talk about Romeo in a second, but they're still going to be edge rushers. You know, they're still going to be doing different things, and the front is going to shift around enough because of the team wanting to go into sub packages and whatnot, that you're going to see these edge guys, you know, fluctuate in exactly what their role is. And there's going to be times when he's sitting outside of the tight end at the nine technique. And then you're going to see times when he's standing up at the seven. You're going to see times when he's got hand in his dirt at the seven and then maybe even down into the five technique as well. So there's going to be a lot of movement with these defensive ends, but are these edge rushers technically right here. My point is, though, I don't think it's going to be as far of a reach from what he's done in the past. It's just a matter of him creating different angles, standing up instead of having his hand down. But the concepts are still going to be there. He's still going to be asked to set the edge. He's still going to be asked to rush the passer. He's still going to be doing all the things that made him a good edge rusher in the previous game.
All right. On the Sam side, Romeo Aguara as the starter, Charles Harris, Austin Bryant, and Reggie Gilbert.
So Austin Bryant is on the PUP now, and
surprise.
Well, remember
Austin Bryant's injured.
Yeah, so he was injured in the spring, and then Coach Campbell said he should be ready to go for camp, and then shows up for camp and he's not, and so now he ends up on the PUP. The thing that people have to remember about the PUP this time of year is that it operates a little bit differently than other times of the year. And you can put a player on the PUP right now as a precautionary measure while you're running other medical tests on him, while you're testing out his injured body part. And if he passes, he can come off the list tomorrow. You know what I mean? Like, he can get pulled off the PUP list tomorrow and be ready to roll. So it's possible this is just a precautionary thing. At the same time, he could be injured and, you know, he may be out a significant amount of time. We don't exactly know, because they don't have to disclose injury reports this time of year. So we don't exactly know what's going on, but yeah, Austin Bryant is not technically available at this time. Now, Charles Harris is the benefactor here, because Charles Harris was the edge four, right? Romeo is and Trey Flowers are starting. Julian is going to be the reserve. I think he's going to be the reserve at both spots. And then Charles Harris, I think Harris can play both spots. He might actually be better suited for the other side because he's, again, he's mostly rushed from the weak side as a in his history. But, Harris ends up by default becoming edge four. And will he be able to hold that? Will Austin Bryant come back? That could end up being a battle, or it could end up being something that just fizzles out and we know who the four top guys are.
All right. Moving to the off the ball linebackers first, the Mike position, Jamie Collins, Jelani Tavai, Jalen Reeves-Maben, and Anthony Pittman.
Yeah. So these are a little bit, position flexible as well, where both the Mike and the inside linebacker are going to have similar roles. The difference is, The Mike has just a little bit more responsibility. The Mike will tend to line up on the tight end side of the formation, whereas the second linebacker, the inside linebacker, other inside linebacker, they're going to do a little bit more in coverage. And but there's going to be some crossover, just like what we were talking about on the edge. But yeah, Collins seems locked in as a starter. Tavai might be the third in line, regardless of off the ball position, right? Just because he is he has some experience, right? But he's
all right. All right. Well, let's pull it all in here. Yeah, okay. The other inside linebacker position, you've got Alex Anzalone, Derek Barnes, Sean Dion Hamilton, Tavante Beckett. All right. So there's your eight linebacker off the ball linebackers.
Okay. So four of them are going to make the team for sure. Probably five. So Collins and Anzalone are your starters. Tavai is probably your off the ball linebacker three right now. But I'm still struggling to find a fit for him where I know he can do the things that the linebackers are asked to do in this scheme. He's dropping weight. He's looking better. They're impressed with that a guy his size can move the way he does. But he still has to be able to produce. It doesn't matter how impressed you are with his ability to move at his size. If he still can't do what you're asking him to do, then, he's not going to be long for the roster. So I'm still a little trepidatious in saying he's going to make the roster. But at the same time, he could be the third best linebacker on the team right now. Barnes is the future. Don't think
he might not be on a game day. He might not be active on game day, but he's going to be on that 53-man roster.
My guess is that he's going to do enough on special teams to kind of earn that. But I agree with you. He is a developmental guy. He spent 3 years edge rushing at Purdue and only spent one off the ball. So that flexibility and that upside makes him really appealing. But as of right now, he's the fourth linebacker at best. I don't think he's any higher than that. But how fast does he learn? How fast does he improve? Is his athleticism that much better than everyone else's that it's going to be tough to keep him out of the mix? That's what I'm looking forward to seeing. How quickly does he integrate himself into this team? Because he sure seems like he has the upside, right? So how far he goes, though, is, to be determined. Now, if they keep a fifth, it's probably Jalen Reeves-Maben. Based on his ability to play special teams, he's so good at that. And they really are going to need linebackers that can play special teams the way he does. So, and again, this is a better suited scheme for his skill set as well. So Reeves-Maben, I'm giving the edge to right now, but you can't rule the rest of the guys out just because this isn't a super deep position group. So there's not a ton separating them. Dion Hamilton was a guy who was an excellent cover guy at Washington, and that's a priority, right? That's something that they need their linebackers to do in this scheme. So can he surprise us and make his way into the top five? It's very possible. At the same time, Tavante Beckett is the UDFA. He's a guy who, has good play speed. He's shown some flashes. They paid him quite a bit of money in a bonus in order to bring him to Detroit. So Beckett's a guy that, if you want a sleeper, Beckett might be your sleeper. Like he could earn his way on specialty. He has a unique ability to work his way through traffic really, really smoothly. And that pays benefits on special teams. That pays benefits as a linebacker. And so how quickly will he be ready, though? That's the big question with all these rookies. So Hamilton versus Reeves-Maben is going to be a fun one. Jelani Tavai versus Derek Barnes is going to be a fun one. And just kind of like, where do these guys slot in? Who pushes who? It's a position group that is definitely not settled.
All right. A little less interesting than the defensive line. It is, you know, like as far as the this competition goes, but it probably is second, you know, as far as groups goes when it comes to what we'll be watching in camp.
I think what makes it less appealing is the talent level isn't at the defensive line. Yeah.
All right, moving to the defensive backfield, we'll start with the corners. Outside corners first. Amani on one side, there's probably some crossover here. One side we're looking at Amani Oruwariye, Quentin Dunbar, and Jerry Jacobs. On the other side, Jeff Okuda, Ifeatu Melifonwu, and Alex Brown.
So Okuda has been the starter all spring. He never really got pulled from the starting spots. Whereas
he has to be a starter.
I would be stunned.
I don't think there's any. He's got to, or else we start heading into bust territory. I'm sorry, but that's like what we're looking at.
I would be stunned if Okuda was not one of the starters. Like he's looked more confident. He's looked stronger. He's fully healthy. He has the right mindset. He seems like the game is coming to him more naturally. And he just seems very confident when he's out there. He just exudes confidence when he's out there. So it looks like a very different player than what we saw as a rookie. Now, opposite of him, they'd been rotating Dunbar and Oruwariye. Who's going to be the guy? I saw Oruwariye more times than I saw Dunbar, but Dunbar has more veteran experience. He's historically been a very highly rated corner in the past. And so can he get back to some of his more natural cornerback tendencies and earn a starting role? That one's up in the air. Whichever one is, you know, cornerback two, cornerback three is still going to be used a lot. We talk about this all the time that, you know, you need a third player at a position group like this that can start, right?
Right.
Offensive tackle, corner, you've got to have three that are capable of starting. And so you've got three in this scenario. And so Melifonwu, again, he's drafted for the future. Probably not going to push him too much. We've seen what happens when you push a rookie.
Yeah, but we'll see him play, I'm sure.
Yes. He will play.
If healthy,
He'll have some situations that he'll be put in because the coaching staff likes the matchup. As we just said, there could be an injury and then all of a sudden he becomes corner three. So on the outside. So yeah, he's going to get some play, even though he's probably a little bit lower in the pecking order. The talent is there. He's a lot like Derek Barnes in the fact that he's going to be a guy that's counted on later. So they're going to want to bring him along as the season goes.
Now, as far as Jacobs and Brown go, like, although they're guys that aren't going to really be making the roster, we'll probably see them during the year.
Sure. Yeah. Jacobs is a UDFA. He's got some potential. Again, he's got lots of confidence. He disrupted his senior year. He's a little bit behind the eight ball for me. Talent is there to earn a spot. I just don't know. I'm not ready to put him on the inside right now. I think there's some things that I need to see him prove to me. Brown's a guy who had been in the league a couple of years. He was with the Chiefs when they won the Super Bowl and was called up on that Super Bowl roster. So again, he's a guy with some experience, even though it's not a ton. He's been in an environment like the Chiefs during that Super Bowl run. So that's influential for him. And so there's been a lot of talk about him having a lot of confidence and playing well as well. So it's not like these guys are completely ruled out. And then if they show that they can maybe push inside to nickel, then, you know, that opens up some possibilities for them even more.
All right. Speaking of nickel, Mike Ford, Corn Elder, AJ Parker.
And so Corn Elder was the guy who was signed as a free agent. Most people thought that he was going to be the nickel coming in. But then Mike Ford started OTAs as the starting nickel. And when he kind of looked back, I guess it shouldn't be surprising. Mike Ford's making more money than Corn Elder. He was signed before Corn Elder. And he's got a lot of speed. And when Mike Ford has had success in the past, it's been as kind of a matchup speed slot guy. So he's going to get a chance to start here. And so we'll see how it goes. We'll see how long he can hold off. But, you know, Corn is a guy who he plays better with the pads on. He's very instinctual. He's good against the run. And so it's possible that these guys kind of become situational corners. You play a team that's better against the run, maybe use Corn a little bit more. You play a team that's got speedy guys, then you're gonna lean on Ford. So right now Ford's got the edge, but I think Corn is definitely gonna have a role on this roster as well. And then with Parker, we'll see. He's kind of in the same boat as like Brown and Jacobs, where he's gonna have to prove some things before he's I'm ready to start considering him in the 53 main conversation.
All right, moving to the safety position, starting with strong safety, Will Harris, Dean Marlowe, Bobby Price, Godwin Igwebukwe, and D'Angelo Amos.
And there's going to be, again, because it's a two split safety scheme now, there's going to be some crossover with these guys as well. Bobby Price has seen some run at free safety, whereas the other guy, Amos has a little bit of free safety range in him. The other guys are more pure strong safeties. Marlowe and Harris are the guys who are going to be competing for the job. Will Harris seemed to be the guy who was leading the competition in the spring. But again, that could just be them acclimating. Marlowe is a guy who is talented enough to push for a starting job. Regardless, like with Corner, whoever loses the job or whoever wins the job is going to be get a little bit more playing time as a starter, but whoever loses the job is still going to be the third in the depth chart there, and he's going to find himself on the field quite a bit in situational spots. The trick here and what's concerning here is that neither of them are like excellent cover guys, and that's what you need out of your third safety. Marlowe's going to be a little bit better than Will Harris. But Will Harris showed a little bit more range in the spring than what we saw in the prior year. So, you know, maybe this is a better suited scheme for Harris, and we'll see him develop a little bit more. It's common for safeties to kind of come into their own in their third year. So maybe it's just his time. Maybe he will take a step. It's another one of these battles that it's not clear, but both of them are going to play. And what happens after those two, that's when it gets really tricky because there's not a lot of depth.
All right. Well, then flipping over to the free safety spot, Tracy Walker, the incumbent, with Jalen Elliott, CJ Moore, and Elijah Holder behind him.
Yeah, so Tracy is the locked-in kind of starter. Elliott has been taking the second-team reps, which is why he kind of gets the nod. He has some, positional range. But him and Bobby Price were both brought in last year as UDFAs. Elliott was the guy who was a little bit more highly touted, yet Bobby Price was the one who found the field first. Now we have a new coaching staff, and it seems like Elliott may be back ahead again. So we'll see if Elliott can hold that spot. right now for me, I've got Elliott kind of penciled in there as like safety four or safety five. CJ Moore has actually been repping behind Elliott, but CJ Moore is going to make the roster because of his special teams contributions. He's the PP or the personal protector for Jack Fox on punts. And that's a massively valuable position. It is the fail safe so that you don't get punts blocked all the time. And he plays that really, really well. He also has that range to play some free safety, has good athletic tendencies. And so maybe he ends up being safety four. That would, I think, be ideal. Probably end up right now is like safety five. But then again, are you really in love with either of those guys on defense if an injury happens? And so, Yeah, right. That's where it gets mildly concerning, which is why I again beat the safety drum, the safety needs upgrade drum. And I'm still hoping that that last roster spot is a veteran safety that they can bring in to help bring a little bit more depth. Like Trey Boston's still out there. If they were to bring Trey Boston into this group, then you know, maybe Trey Boston ends up solidifying the unit a little bit more.
All right, moving over to special teams. Kickers, Randy Bullock and Matthew Wright. I'm guessing we're only keeping one and whoever does better in camp.
Yeah, right. I mean, look, Bullock is the 10-year veteran. Wright's been in the league 2 years. Bullock has a pretty decent success rate on field goals, like 85 in the last couple of years. Over the last 4 years, I think he has completed 85 of his kicks or successfully hit 85 of his kicks. His career is a little bit lower, like 83.2 or something like that. Wright has not missed in the NFL, but he's only attempted seven extra points and four field goals. So 11 attempts, but he's hit them all. So, you know, maybe he ends up outperforming the 10-year veteran. You know, look, last year we saw a undrafted free agent on a futures deal make the roster and land in the Pro Bowl with Jack Fox. Could that happen again? Could Matt Wright end up being the guy who, you know, goes from a guy who we've kind of had an afterthought about to winning a job and then having a lot of success? Sure. I mean, it could definitely happen. But if you want to play it safe, you're probably going with Bullock. Look, neither of them are good from 50. I mean, Wright hasn't really shown it. Wright's career long, including college, is 50. And Bullock is like 7 of 14 in the last 4 years from 50. So you're not getting a lot of depth on your kicks from these guys. But, hey, that could be a good thing, right? Just means you got to be more aggressive on
offense. You got to go for it. Yeah, you got to go right? for it.
Exactly.
We're on that 40-yard line. We got to go for it. All right, so Jack Fox, you mentioned he's the only punter in camp. Long snapper Don Muehlbach and Scott Daly. You know who I feel should be the long snapper.
Yeah, you like Scott Daly because he played at Notre Dame, right?
No, I'm a Muehlbach man. Let him snap forever.
Well, he might, you know. I mean, look, 18th season, 18th in the NFL, I believe. Yeah. Oh, yeah. All with the Lions. And I mean, how many guys is he every year? He just knocks off a different guy. Right. So I just don't see anybody, Scott Daly or Jimmy Landis or whoever, right, stepping up and nobody's been able to knock him off before. I feel bad for Scott Daly because he's probably going to run into, you know, he's just going to be the next in line on the Muehlbach train.
You can catch on somewhere else. Muehlbach, 37th in NFL history in games played, 260. He's played 17, yeah, so this is year 18.
Isn't he like third on the Lions all time or something like that? Or maybe second. I think he might be second. Yeah. Hansen's number one. And then I think
Hansen's sixth all time in NFL history.
Yeah, it was a monster. And then Raiola was number two, and I think Muehlbach just passed Raiola.
He would have passed Raiola.
Yeah. So
Lomas Brown has played in more games, but not as a Lion. He's played for more than one team, you know, he played for more than just the Lions.
Yep.
So yeah, it would be Muehlbach.
Yeah, he's I seem to remember writing an article about that, if I'm not mistaken. They
Excellent all... memory, Eric.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's our battles. That's what we're looking at. It's training camp, so you're going to see guys, you know, being cut and added on. I mean, geez, it seems like it happens quite a bit, right? It's not, I don't want to say daily, but it happens enough. And they're going to, you know, because we're getting back to normal with all of our requirements, that's going to, we're going to see, I think, a lot of the tendencies that we've seen in the past where you start rotating some of the bottom end of the roster. If guys aren't working out, then you got to get new ones. If you have injuries, you got to sign new guys to replace those injured players so that you can have a competent roster to compete with and practice with, because you don't have another team coming in this training camp, right? So we're going to see more roster moves as it happens. But, you know, we hit the highlights of what we, you know, what we think are going to be, you know, the players that are on the bubble, I guess, right?
Right.
So
yeah, no, this will just continue to develop as the weeks go on.
Right. So yeah, it's like we're going to have basically like this coming Sunday we'll be off, and then they're going to go back to work again, and then we'll be off that, they'll be off like the following Sunday, and then the Sunday after, and then we start looking at preseason games. And yeah, it's just, I mean, it's going to be right on top of us before we know it here, Joe.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And that's a good thing. We'll be playing games on September 7th. It's Cowboys, Buccaneers, and this will be just a deluge of NFL after that. There's one more thing we wanted to touch on before we left, and that is the new COVID rules, which has become a popular national topic over the last few days. So we'll just touch on it real quick for the Lions.
Yeah, I look, here's the bottom line, right? The NFL lost a bunch of money last year because they were unable to play, unable to fill stadiums with fans, and unable to, you know, run the season exactly the way that they had historically. They lost a ton of money. So now this year they're doing they want to be able to put a product on the field that is a consistent product that's going to make money. Because look, and at the bottom line, the NFL is not putting COVID restrictions on the players because they're worried about like the health of everybody. You know what I mean? Like they're putting them in.
We already know they are not concerned about the health of the players.
Yeah. It is a business, and they are doing this from a business decision. And yes, there's going to be a lot of PR around the NFL pushing for vaccinated players and vaccinated coaches, because there's going to be a lot of businesses that are going to follow the NFL's model. But this is a business decision for the NFL. And I think, you know, a lot of people are getting up in arms, and a lot of the players are getting up in arms about which side of the fence that they're on, whether they want to be vaccinated or whether they don't want it to be. Everyone has the right to weigh their opinion in it however they want. They can take their whatever stance that they want to take, and that's fine. That is the players' rights. At the same time, the NFL is a private organization that can put whatever rules it wants. And if it believes having vaccinated players reduces the risks of infections and thus correlates to a better product on the field, which then makes them more money, then that's kind of their right, right? That's their theory. They believe that a vaccinated person is less likely to infect others. And so they're putting rules in place that favor people who are making that choice to get vaccinated. Now, if you don't get vaccinated, and then you end up contracting the virus, and then you spread the virus, then it becomes a problem, because that's when the NFL is going to start losing money, right? And that's when they are going to, if you're costing them money, well, then they're going to come after you to get that money. And that's why we're seeing all of these rules, like you're not gonna, you, if the game has to be canceled because you got, you you know, contracted the virus as an unvaccinated player, and then we couldn't reschedule it and we had to cancel it, well, you're gonna lose your game check, your whole team is gonna lose their game check, and the opponent is going to lose the, all of their game checks as well, because if we're not making money, you're not making money, and all your friends are not making money. It's kind of a like an army mentality, right? Like one guy messes up and the whole bunk's gotta do push-ups, essentially, right? So they're doing this, and maybe it's an overreach and maybe it's an over punishment, but they're doing this because of money, right?
Yeah, they're trying to protect their money.
Exactly.
It's interesting. The only interesting thing to me about all this is I get the whole forfeiting thing. I don't think it's going to happen. Probably won't. But like, what if it came down to it and it's like the Steelers or the Packers are going to force they're going to be the ones that have to forfeit. They're going to do, the league will do every last thing it can to keep them from forfeiting. But yeah, it's like, it's the Bengals or the Lions. Like, no, they're just going to forfeit. That's that.
Well, look at it. Last year, they played every game. Last year, they didn't have to do this.
Yeah, the Steelers and Ravens played on a Wednesday.
Right.
They
jumped through a million hoops. And then the entire Lions coaching staff was out, and they were like, well, you got to play.
Right? You guys got to play this Sunday. Yeah, we're not moving it.
Yeah, look, even if an unvaccinated player contracts the virus, spreads the virus to other players, the NFL is still going to want to make their money. They're not going to start handing out punishments because they're like, oh, I want to teach you a lesson. No, they're still going to jump through hoops to get their money because that's what it's really all about to them.
I would assume they would still try to move a game till Monday or Tuesday if they had to. Who knows? And well, then you have all these questions like, well, if it's an unvaccinated player spreading it, what if it ends up being a vaccinated player that gets the virus and then starts spreading it? Like, who knows?
Which we're starting to see, right? Yeah. We've started to see some vaccinated personnel contract and then have to sit out. And it's a complicated issue with that, because I from what I understand, the punishment won't be there for the vaccinated player because the vaccinated player had taken steps to try and put themselves in a situation. So they're almost not going to punish the people who are, you know, doing what the league prefers. But look, the focus really has been on the players. The coaches, they all have to be vaccinated. If the coaches are not vaccinated, they cannot be in a room teaching. They have to do everything virtually. They can't get close enough to their players. Like, so the NFL coaches have to be vaccinated. And we saw that like with Minnesota, where their offensive line coach didn't want to get vaccinated and he got fired, right? Because they're like, hey, we need a coach. It's like that with the media as well. If you are in the media and you want access to the team, well, you got to get vaccinated, because the NFL isn't going to risk their money they're not going to risk their money to, like, look, if I want to go in and talk to Tracy Walker, they're like, yeah, Eric, you got to be vaccinated because you're just not, you're not important enough to not get vaccinated to come risk Tracy Walker. Right. So like, it goes beyond just the players, you know, and look, if I want to do my job, then I got to get vaccinated to do my job. And if the coaches want to do their job, it's the same thing. And so these are the rules in the environment in which we live. And it's not just the NFL. There's rules like this all over the place. And I don't want to get in a whole debate over like,
I think everybody's heard enough about vaccinations and everything.
Yeah.
I guess we really don't need to talk about it too much on our show. It will be interesting as the weeks wear on, and if this ends up bubbling up as a problem. Hopefully it's not. Hopefully everybody's eligible to play every week for all the teams, and we don't miss any games, and nothing's in peril of being played or not. We'll probably talk about it as it comes along, as it happens.
Because that's
the deal right now. That's what we're looking at right now.
Yeah, because I don't think it's going away, right? I mean, as much as we want it to, and as much as the league wants it to, this isn't something that's going to be over right now, this year. It's just not. And so, you're going to have situations that are going to come up. It's just going to be the nature of the business. And, you know, we will have to address them when we do. So, yeah, I don't want to reopen the any debate here or anything like that.
No, we're talking football here.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to try and and again, it's not even like my opinion or your opinion. I just wanted to make sure.
Exactly. Well, I guess we want to make that clear to everybody.
Yeah, yeah. This is our perspective of what the league is trying to execute, and so that's what it is. And so we'll see how it goes. Who knows if it's going to work? Who knows if it's not? Odds are it's not, because that's just the way that this is, the virus goes, right?
Yeah.
There's loophole. Things find a way, right? And so
Jurassic Park, life will find a way.
And so, so we'll see a whole bunch of this coming up. Unfortunately, it's not going away, but training camp is there.
That is what's upon us.
Yeah. There's going to be rules that follow it. I'm interested to see if they start changing rules about Ford Field and if they start making people wear masks again. Like, I don't, they've said no, yeah, but maybe they will.
They said no, but we'll see. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So we'll see if the league starts changing rules, if the state starts changing rules, if the government starts. I mean, well, so this is a complex situation, but for now, open environment at training camp. Masks are not required as of today, and so we'll see how it goes. Because it's gonna be fun when these guys start, hitting each other, and it's gonna be an exciting time.
Yeah, it's upon us. All right, so ratings wise, even though we haven't been on in maybe months, like we have added a rating or two in that time.
Yeah,
I saw a very positive one out of. T Boss Me 71, straight to the point, great insights, my new source for insightful Lions talk. Very nice by him.
I think the other one, the jumble of letters, the F H H F G B K. I think that name. One's also new. That one is also new.
Yeah, because we were before
yeah. And up to 385. Yeah, I mean, fantastic. We have lacked a little bit during the summer here. That's mostly my fault.
And hey, sorry, it's the summer. Look at what we talked about today. Nothing crazy has happened with the Lions in the last month. We haven't missed anything. So
yeah,
if there was a time where you missed a couple weeks, this is the time.
I'd love to blame it on injuries, but it's
you do have an injury.
But it's just life kind of happens, right? And so we're gonna get back to things more on the regular now. And it's football's back. So
we're back.
Ready to go.
All right. That's all we got for this week. Thanks for everyone for listening. And until next time, let's go Lions.